Well, good afternoon. It's great to be with you. Whenever someone says I'm an attorney, I usually put the little asterisk, the good kind, right? The good kind. There are a few out there. Yes, I am a conservative Anabaptist attorney. My wife Heather and I have four children, and we live in Madison, Virginia. So every time I come to Penn Valley, there's always lots of memories here. I kind of grew up at Penn Valley in a way. Every couple of years, we would come here for what's called an administrative retreat. And at the administrative retreat, it would include Hillcrest, Mountain View, Faith Mission. Some of you probably are familiar with those nonprofit facilities. My dad, Eldon, worked at Mountain View for about 30 plus years. So anyway, just to start with a story here, one time we were here and I was just a little guy. I have an older brother and his name is Jethro, Moses' father-in-law Jethro. We called him Jet. And we were here. And back in the day, some of you may remember this, there used to be rooms along the side. Anybody remember the rooms up here? Yes? Okay. All right. So before this beautiful renovation, there used to be rooms up here. Well, one particular administrative conference, they had the meeting going on in here, and we were staying in one of the rooms to the side. My dad was up front speaking, and so we were in this room, and my brother and I, getting itchy feet, said, "We would like to go out. We don't want to just stay in this room." And my mother, who was with us, said, "You can't go out because they have a meeting going on." And so we said, "Well, there's always the window. The window's an option." And so, lacking the wisdom of Solomon at that point, we opened the window, and somebody gingerly picked me up and dropped me out. Well, the drop was a little bit further than we thought, and down the window well I went and could not escape. So my brother, remember we call him Jet, jetted out of the door, and right in the middle of the meeting with my dad up front said, "Tyler fell in the hole!" So that meeting came to a bit of an abrupt end, but I've never lived that story down. Nearly 30 years later, somebody still reminded me of that story the other day. They couldn't remember my name, but they knew Tyler fell in the hole, so that was my name. So anyway, good times. Thank you, Aaron, for sharing that. It's such a touching, vulnerable message, and I just thank you for being vulnerable. That's very, very touching, even to me, who's not experienced the loss that you have. It's so touching just to think about how God takes care of us, and I appreciate that introduction as well. So this afternoon, we're going to talk a little bit about estate planning. Estate planning. Now, that subject may build excitement in the room, right? You're excited about talking about estate planning and drawing up legal documents. But I say that it is exciting, and it's exciting because you have an opportunity to leave a legacy. You have an opportunity to leave an organized estate for your spouse, for your children, for your loved ones, for the community, for the church, for your charities to see and to be blessed by. You've got an opportunity here. And so if you haven't thought about estate planning, it's a wonderful time to think about that. One of the blessings here is that just as I walked in, the word that struck me was fellowship, right? Fellowship. The Anabaptist community is so blessed to have fellowship. I walked in the door, everyone's speaking with each other, and I have a feeling even if the only thing that you got accomplished this weekend was speaking with each other and fellowshipping with each other, it would still be worth it, right? It's such a blessing to be part of a community with fellowship. Another word is stewardship. 1 Corinthians 4:2 says it's required in a man that it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. It's required in stewards that a man be found faithful. Back to that word faith. Stewardship and faith are so important. We are called to be good stewards with what we've been given. So when we think about legacies and estate planning, there's some practical aspects that have to go with it. And I brought with me something called a will organizer. This will organizer is produced by Anabaptist Foundation. I was employed with AF for about 3.5 years and finally got busy enough that I just had to exit and created my own firm, and now they're a client. But anyway, I love Anabaptist Foundation, Anabaptist Financial, those two organizations. And this will organizer is free of charge from them. If you want to call them and get a free will organizer, you can do that at any time. I also brought a number of them with me. We probably don't have quite enough here for every couple, but if you'd like to have one, I'm just going to sit this stack right on the front bench
and you can come pick them up. Once they're gone, okay? But you know where you can get them for free, okay? So right on the front bench, afterwards, you can help yourself to a will organizer.
All right. So that can help you get started. It's not actually a will, but it's an organizer. It gives you a chance to write down what you have, gives you a chance to think about what might be in your estate, gives you a chance to just plan with your wife. One of the biggest things that's missing in a lot of wills is estate planning. You don't just want to have a will that's legally recognized, you want to have a will that's, or a trust, that's well thought out and well planned, because you may have a business, you may have a rental house, you may have a blended family, you may have all kinds of scenarios you want to think about in your estate that requires good planning, not just a legal document. At the end here, we are going to leave some time for questions and responses, and we call it questions and responses and not questions and answers, but we're going to try. So if you have a question along the way, just write it down or make a mental note, and we will definitely try to leave time for that. So what is estate planning? And just a very simple definition is being a wise steward of your God-given property during life. Okay? During life. We often think estate planning is only relevant after you pass away, but I say it's very relevant during life, because during life is when you're doing the planning, it's when you have an opportunity to give things away, and you have an opportunity to leave a very organized estate that leaves a good legacy. You can plan in advance, you can give in advance, and you can put it together well in advance of your passing. You can maximize your income tax savings. If you ever think about how to save some taxes, this is a good way to do that. You can meet with your accountant and sit down with him or her and work on that. That's part of estate planning. It's not just the legal side, it's also the tax side. Think about how you can minimize unnecessary taxes. You can also minimize the paperwork on your loved ones who will ultimately be handling the estate. And if you've organized your giving before you're gone, it can make it much easier on them. Our Anabaptist people are often business owners. You might be a partial owner. You might have multiple people that own the farm. You might have multiple people that own the business. And so you really want to be thinking about, how do I disperse of this in an organized way? If I were to pass away tomorrow, tomorrow is not promised, right? If I were to pass away tomorrow, where would this go? Does anybody even know what I have? Does anybody know about the loan that I made to someone? Does anyone know what the interest or the balance or the principal left on that loan is? Or was it all just verbal? So these are some of the things. I know I'm sort of throwing a bunch of questions and comments at you, but just be thinking about, what's in my estate, and does anybody else know what's in my estate? Do they know where my investments are? Do they know where my bank accounts are? Do they know what I have? Or is the executor going to be scrambling around for a couple of years trying to figure out who owes what to who and where it's from and all of that? So just think about leaving behind an organized estate. Many Anabaptists don't have an estate plan, believe it or not. Many Anabaptists do not have a will or a trust, and that's tragic. And I would say it's especially tragic in a unique group like this, because in a unique group like this, there's a lot of blended families. There's spouses and there's children and there's different people from different families coming together, which is wonderful, but it also makes it a little bit more complex. If you pass away without a will or a trust, then the court follows a process known as intestate succession. You probably heard that phrase, intestate succession, which is a statutory code that the court has to follow in dispersing of your estate. Regardless of whether you like it that way, regardless of whether those were your wishes or not, it's a set code and they have to follow that code in dispersing of your estate. So you've got to have a will or a trust, otherwise the court decides how everything goes. Your wishes are irrelevant. What you wanted was irrelevant. Well, I told, you know, my sister that I wanted her to have me. But if you didn't put it in writing and it's in a will and it's in a trust and nobody ever formalized that, then it's not legally binding. The court decides who your executor is. You might say, well, if I could choose who my executor is, the person handling the finances of the estate after you pass away, if I could choose who the executor was, I'd choose my son, or I'd choose my daughter, or I'd choose these people. But the court decides who the executor is if you don't have an estate plan. The court decides where it goes. So if you say, well, I had a special needs child, or I had one child that really shouldn't have that much money, or someone who needed a little bit more, or I wanted my church or my school to have a certain amount of money, none of that is relevant. The court just has to disperse it equally the way the intestate code provides. And most importantly, if you have minor children, the court decides where your children go as well. And so even if your estate has nothing in it, if you've got minor children, keep that in mind. Oh, and by the way, if the court can't find any heirs, it goes where? Anybody know? Back to the state. And that's called escheat. Someone said that's appropriately named, but we won't get into that. So just be aware of that. It's especially important in blended families and remarried families. There are really specific codes. Dave had some good questions before the meeting to get the wheels turning. And one of those questions just had to do with, okay, so if you don't have a will and one spouse passes away or one spouse comes from another marriage, what are the codes on that? And it varies from state to state. Pennsylvania has a pretty complex code, and it just depends is the answer. You know, if you've got a child but no spouse, or spouse but no descendants, or descendants from one marriage but not the other, it's complicated. But essentially, depending on the blended family arrangement, the spouse gets a certain amount of money, and then half of the estate, or half of the estate, but not, anyway, it gets very complicated, and you really should just sit down with an attorney if you have that question, because there is no really easy answer on that. If one spouse dies without a will, and it's from a blended family, and there are children, if there are children involved, his children, her children, it gets very complex if you don't have a will or a trust. So the encouragement there is just get a simple estate plan, at least a simple estate plan on paper, that way you don't have to worry about that complexity. Unnecessary government interference can be avoided. Family disputes can be avoided. Tax burdens can be avoided. And in the state of Pennsylvania, since we're in Pennsylvania, we'll talk about a little bit more about Pennsylvania, even though I realize there's other states represented here. PA does have an inheritance tax, as many of you probably have experienced. And it's 4.5% to children over 21, 12% to siblings, 15% to others, other than your spouse. So there are inheritance taxes in Pennsylvania, so you do want to think about how can I responsibly approach the Pennsylvania tax code? Are there ways that I can be a better steward of my money, or does a bunch of it go to the state in that case? There are some solutions to tax burdens. You can give your estate away, part of it away, or all of it away to your loved ones. You can give it to charity, tax-free. You can put it into an irrevocable trust, but you've got to think through the planning carefully, because depending on which type of trust you use, which we'll get into later, it can have a very big impact on how your taxes and your capital gains and all of that are calculated. So why don't Anabaptists have estate plans in many cases? And what I like to say is 99% of attorneys give the others a bad name, right? But hopefully that's not the case. But when you need a root canal, you go where? The dentist, all right. If your wife is in labor, you go either the doctor or the midwife. And when you need a will, you should often go to an attorney. All right, I know root canal, go to the attorney, about the same thing, but I just want to encourage you on that. Consider doing that. And be careful in who does your estate planning. Sometimes there are people out offering things that are not very... Boy, how do I say this nicely? There's a gentleman that's going around, the Amish and the Mennonites, who's not an attorney, and he's offering all kinds of estate planning packages. Buy today, quick sale on a trust kind of thing. And a little bit of research on him, turns out he's a convicted felon, fresh out of jail, and he's still going out doing the exact same things that put him in prison in the first place. So just do your background research before you have somebody plan your estate. One question I often get is, can we use the internet to make a will? The answer is yes, you can. So if you choose to go online and make a will, you can do that. Okay, here are some cautions if you do that. If you do it yourself, are you missing out on the estate planning aspect? Okay, have you really sat down and thought about what are the tax consequences, what are the legal consequences of what I'm writing? Is it possible to go online and print off a will that's legally sound? Yes, it is. And I'm not saying you can't do that. I'm not even saying you shouldn't do that if you've carefully worked through the tax and legal consequences. If you do that, be very, very careful. I tend to see the bad examples that come through. either the handwritten wills or the online wills or whatever that were not properly planned, and then it can cost a lot more in legal fees just to unravel the mess that was created than it would have cost to do a will in the first place. So just be careful if you do it that way. One of the things that people miss sometimes in the do-it-yourself, and I had a case just like this, where the gentleman did not include a simple phrase called, I waive surety or bond. And you think, well, why would I include that? Well, if you don't include that in Virginia, okay, if you don't include that, the executor has to go buy an insurance policy or an insurance bond, which protects the estate against fraud of the executor. Okay, so I had a case where I literally had to go with an older gentleman, very trustworthy Anabaptist gentleman, down to the insurance agent and buy an insurance policy for $700 or $800 because that do-it-yourself will didn't include that legal language. Another thing do-it-yourself will may not include is what's called a self-proving affidavit. And I know this is just legal jargon, but that self-proving affidavit is something that can avoid your witnesses having to come into court and testify. Okay, so if you don't have a self-proving affidavit, the court may need to have whoever signed the will as witnesses come in and say, yes, I saw so-and-so sign the will. Well, you can imagine how difficult that might be, right? If you can't find the person, or if you just went into the post office or UPS office and had them notarize it and you don't even know who witnessed it, that can be very difficult to track down that witness. So a self-proving affidavit can avoid that. The other thing that can be difficult is the validity of the will. So if you put together a will, is it legally valid? It can be legally valid if you do it correctly, but if you don't have the proper formalities, it might not even be a legal will. If it's not a legal will, it's just a piece of paper, unfortunately. So you need witnesses, you need the proper number of witnesses. I recommend you have it notarized, and so make sure that you do it correctly if you do it yourself. One more story on that. There was a husband and wife who did it themselves. It was an $8 million estate, and they did not think about all the different aspects of estate planning. And so when they wrote it, they missed a really key portion of how the estate was going to be dispersed, and it had the potential to result in a $360,000 early tax bill to their children. So just if you do it yourself, do it carefully. That's all I'm saying. Just do it carefully if you do it yourself. So if you do an estate plan, one of the things that I'd like to just emphasize one more time is consider giving in your estate plan. Many people who do have an estate plan just think, well, it automatically goes to my wife and children. Well, depending on the needs, that may be perfectly appropriate. But depending on the size of the estate, it may be really appropriate to give to charity. Just think about giving to charity as you put your estate plan together. You can leave a lasting legacy. We come back to legacy. You have such an opportunity to leave a lasting legacy if you give to charity. That gets me really excited when a client says, hey, we want to give this percentage to our church or this percentage to that mission or what have you. It's such a blessing. You can get really specific or you can get really general. You can be as specific as, you know, I want to buy this many goats, you know, for that African mission. Or you can just say, I want 10% of the estate to go to my church. So there's various ways you can do it, but it's such a blessing to see that. So consider giving to charity in your estate. So there's essentially two types of giving in estate planning. You can either give an estate gift or a lifetime gift. An estate gift is one that takes effect upon your passing, and that could be a lot of different things. It could be, I want to give one quarter of my estate to my daughter or to my special needs daughter. I want to give this much to clean well drilling in Haiti. I want to give $100,000 to that charity or this charity. That's estate giving. But then you can also do lifetime giving. So we often think, well, I can't give any of this away until I'm gone. And depending on the size of the estate, it may make perfect sense to reduce it down. Do you really need 5 houses if you're 90, right? Do you really need the business once you're past a certain age? So just think that through. I'm not here to say when you should give it away. I'm just saying, think about it. Just think about it. When does it make sense to give something away to charity or to your loved ones? If you decide, hey, I really want this farm to go to my 3 boys, you have an opportunity to do that before you pass away. But again, do it with a tax planning professional as well, because you could run into a capital gains issue. One of the clients that came in a while back just sat down, and I was really blessed by his idea. He said, look, I've got a profitable business. This business is running, it's running well, and I really can't bear the idea of this business shutting down and being liquidated upon my death. And if you haven't left a plan on that, liquidating your business could simply shut off a growing business. It could liquidate a business that has an opportunity to continue giving and blessing others. And so what he said was, I want to put this business into a trust. I'm going to put this business into a trust, and years after I'm gone, this person who I've set up as the trustee, who's agreed to be the trustee, can continue running that business and giving the profits to charity. I thought that was so neat, because 20 years after his passing, a mission could get a check from this trust that was started long before when he passed away. All right, so let's get into the different types of estate plans. You have wills and you have trusts. The basic two types, wills and trusts. And it's really not as complicated as we make it. We often think, oh, that's going to be complicated. I don't know if I understand it. Really isn't that complicated. And I'll try to make it fairly simple here today. So basically, what is a will? It should be typed, okay? Some people handwrite wills. I do not recommend that. Handwritten wills tend to create legal projects and legal cases for us to do. And so please type it. Even if you're doing it yourself, please make sure it is typed. And then sign it. Make sure it's signed and dated. If it's not written, signed, and dated, it's not going to be a will in any state. Okay? And then in Virginia and in Pennsylvania, we definitely recommend having two disinterested witnesses. So two people who are not actually taking under your will being the witnesses. Two adults not taking under your will being your witnesses. Okay? And then you need to name an executor, so the person handling the estate, and guardians for your minor children. I'm not sure how many here have minor children. I'm sure some of you do. If you've got minor children, make sure you name guardians for your minor children. That's a whole other story. But we had a case that was really, really exceedingly difficult because both parents passed away. They had children. No will. Okay? And even conservative families, believe it or not, can have big disputes when there are minor children involved. Okay? It's just, it tugs on your emotions, and it can be so difficult. And so if you just nominate minor guardians for your minor children, it can really save your family a lot of disputes. So please keep that in mind. And then I recommend having it notarized. Okay, so one more time, typed, signed, dated, witnessed. Make sure you name an executor. Make sure you name guardians if you have minors, and notarized. And of course, you need clear language on disbursement. Where do I want it to go? So that's a will. Really not that difficult. That is a will. Everyone should have at least a basic will, and we certainly recommend you do that. There was another case where there was a young man who had children, and he was killed, did not have a wife, was killed, and his dad became the executor. And so the dad was working on the estate, and then the dad was killed. It was an exceptional case, but it was so tragic. Neither one had wills, and it just became a huge project because the original person didn't have a will, and then the second person handling it didn't have a will. And so I just recommend, if you don't have one, get one. And if you're someone who has a large business and you're thinking, I just don't even know where to start, my recommendation for you, whatever state you're in, go sit down with an attorney and get a good basic will. Just start somewhere. You'll sleep better at night, your wife will sleep better at night, and you'll just be happier. And then you can start gradually over time figuring out what you want to do with that business. Just start somewhere. Sometimes people say, I haven't even started yet because I don't know where to start. But just start somewhere. That's my recommendation. So what's the difference between a will and a trust? Okay, a trust sounds really fancy and it is a little more complex, but it's just not that complicated. So we'll try to break it down for you. All right, so a trust is very similar to a will. It's just a little bit longer. It has a little different language. Instead of an executor, you have a trustee. Okay, your trustee handles the assets in the trust. The executor handles the finances in the will. The key advantage of a trust is that it avoids probate. Okay, I'm sure many of you know what probate is. And probate is a process where the court works through the wishes that are stated in the will or the trust and then disperses the assets in accordance with those wishes. So let me just walk you through probate a little bit. I'll demonstrate this. So if you have a will, let's just say you've written a will out. This is your will. Okay, it's been properly notarized, witnessed, signed. It's a valid will. When you pass away, your executor is going to take this will, and he or she is going to go down to the clerk of the court. Pennsylvania calls it a register of wills. And you're going to submit that will. He or she is going to submit that will to the clerk of the court. Okay? And the clerk is going to say, okay, here's a will. Well, no, it's not valid because it's not signed. Oh, no, no. Okay, no, we've done it right. It's right. It's valid. Okay, it's valid will. And so that will is then admitted to probate. Okay? That will is now admitted to probate. And then the fun begins. Okay? And so there's a process called accounting. The executor of that will has to go through what's called an accounting. And he or she has to go through the entire estate and account for what's in it. And we mentioned this just a little bit earlier, but I mean, if you've got loans, if you've got investments, if you've got rental houses, if you have property in multiple states, if you have partial business, all those things have to be accounted for in that accounting. And by the way, if you've got property in multiple states, you have to do probate in every state where you own property. Just a little tip there. So there's an accounting, and then there's also, there's inventory and there's accounting. And until that entire disbursement, accounting and disbursement process is completed, the court is going to be looking over your shoulder. In Virginia, they call it a commissioner of accounts, okay? The commissioner of accounts is going to be looking over your shoulder as the executor until that entire estate is dispersed. And that will, its requirements and the accounting and its disbursements have to balance. It absolutely must balance. So if you're saying, okay, this estate is worth $136,000, the disbursement must be exactly $136,000 unless you've got different expenses and income in between. So if you've had utility bills, maybe you put some gravel on the driveway, maybe you had a few different things come in, that income and those expenses must all be added and balanced. And you must have receipts for all of that. So possible to do? Yes. But you can understand why some people would rather have a trust than just avoid that probate process. So anything in a trust skips probate, okay? So the trust, if you create a trust and it's done correctly, you can dump anything you have into that trust. It can be land, it can be investment accounts, it can be LLCs, corporations, whatever you have, personal effects, can all go into that trust. And then what happens when you pass away is that you can simply... So this is maybe getting a little complex, but if you have a trust, you're also going to have what's called a pour-over will, okay? So if you say, yes, I'm going to do a trust instead of a will, let's just say this is a trust, I've done a trust, you're also going to have what's called a pour-over will. The pour-over will just serves as a catch-all in case there's anything you haven't put into the trust. Maybe you've put most of your property, most of your assets into the trust, but you have not put everything into the trust. That pour over will simply catches anything else that's not in the trust and pours it into the will. So when your executor of the pour over will goes down to the clerk of the court, submits the trust, submits the will, the accounting is very, very simple because you just say anything that we own is now in the trust. Done. Closed. You're finished. So that's the difference between a trust-based plan with a pour over will versus just a straight will. The one is very simple, pours everything into the trust, you submit it to the clerk of the court, they see that it happened correctly, you're done. The other one goes through the accounting and the inventory and the receipts and all that fun stuff. So that's a huge advantage of a trust. The other thing is a trust is private. So a will in most states is public information. If you want to go look up a will, you can find it. Whereas a trust and everything in it is private and it's confidential when it is published. Okay, when you pass away, your will becomes published. Whereas your trust does not become published even upon your death. There's a flexible timeline in how you disperse, and that's maybe one of the best features of a trust as well. So we talk about blended families. So if you say, okay, that the dad had a farm, had a business, had children of his first marriage, and then he marries a spouse, what are we going to do with that? One possibility is that the dad or the couple creates a trust and says in that trust, during my spouse's lifetime, she may stay in our family home, and then upon her passing, it'll go to the children. Okay? Or it can even put in a specific amount of money and say, okay, this amount of money is for her upkeep during life, and upon her passing, then it goes to the children. There are many different things you can do with a trust that just gradually give it away instead of a will where it's just very cut and dry and everything goes here and everything goes here. So that can be a useful tool in providing for a spouse. Again, you can make all kinds of provisions in that trust that say, I want to gradually give this to my wife, or I want my wife to stay in our home, but at the same time, still reserving that for your children or wherever you think it should go. You may have a special needs child. You may have a child that, as we mentioned earlier, does not have the financial planning ability to have as much money as the others. There's many things you can use a trust for, and you can put money in there for their care without simply giving them a lump sum that they wouldn't be able to manage responsibly. So that's the basic difference between a will and a trust. And there are different types of trusts. I won't go too deep into that. I'll leave that for the question and answer if you have a question on that. But there are revocable and irrevocable trusts, okay? Revocable and irrevocable trusts. Those are two of the main types used, not the only types used, but two of the main types. Revocable trust sounds just like it sounds, or means just what it sounds like. It is revocable. You can change it, you can amend it, you can put things into it, you can take it out. An irrevocable trust is not changeable, is not able to be amended by the person creating the trust. It's irrevocable. And so when you put funds into one of those trusts, they are considered given away. You've given away those funds, you put them into the irrevocable trust, and they're given away and it's set. So depending on what state you're in, that can be helpful. It can be if you're putting funds into an irrevocable trust and you don't want them in your estate, that may be a tax planning method. Or you may say, no, we want the perfect flexibility of putting in and taking out, and so you may do a revocable trust. But those are two basic types there. And then finally, just touching on a couple other types of estate documents. We talk about wills and trusts, which are the estate planning basic tools, but then there's also a few other things that often accompany those documents in your planning. One is a power of attorney. Sure, many of you have heard of a power of attorney. And a power of attorney, the simplest way to think about it is applicable during life. It's applicable during life. Okay, so if you are living and disabled, a power of attorney can be very helpful to give someone else authority to go deposit checks, to withdraw money, to sign deeds, to do anything that you could do legally if you were not incapacitated. Okay, so a power of attorney can be very, very helpful if there's a disability during life. An advance medical directive. So the power of attorney I was mentioning earlier was a financial power of attorney. An advance medical directive can name someone as your healthcare agent for you. So you can say, what would happen if I were to be put in a coma? What would I do? Who would take care of me? And if you're placed in a coma or you can't speak for yourself, an advanced medical directive gives someone the authority to make medical decisions for you. So you might be in a case where you have they have to make a really invasive procedure, or they're trying to make a decision. Your medical agent can make that decision for you. Very, very important document for everybody to have is an advanced medical directive. It can also give instructions in advance. Hey, look, if I can't speak for myself, I don't want to be kept artificially alive. I don't want to be in a position where there's all kinds of things happening to me if my physician has determined that my death is terminal. So that's an opportunity to say that as well in that document. Two more things, and then we're going to open it up for questions. One is a transfer on death. Transfer on death. That can apply to bank accounts. It can also apply to real estate. Transfer on death on a bank account automatically transfers the assets in your bank account to someone you name as your transfer on death designee. Pennsylvania, Virginia, just about every state allows that. And what that does is it automatically gives that money in your bank account, in your investment account, your Anabaptist financial account, your IRA, to your transfer on death designee. And then that person, if they're not your sole heir, can then disperse it to the others. So think about that. In Pennsylvania, there is such a thing, again, as we said, an inheritance tax. So you want to be a little careful in Pennsylvania with a transfer on death, unless the estate reimburses that TOD for the inheritance tax. But TOD, transfer on death, can be very, very helpful because it just automatically transfers it and it skips probate. So if you transfer on death on your bank accounts, your investment accounts, any types of financial accounts you have, those assets skip probate with or without a trust. It just goes straight to that person, and then they can disperse it in accordance with your will. Transfer on death real estate is also another interesting thing. So if you decide, I want my deed to go to my children upon my death, you can create a transfer on death deed. OK, Okay, so that's another estate planning tool. It doesn't have to go through a trust. It can simply go from your transfer on death deed straight to the children upon your passing. No probate needed, no trust needed in that case. If you own property jointly with rights of survivorship with your spouse, it automatically goes to the spouse. Pretty intuitive, but just something worth mentioning. If you've had a blended family, you have not updated your deed, strongly recommend you update your deeds. And if you update your deeds to joint with rights of survivorship, it automatically goes to the other spouse, doesn't go through probate. But again, as we talked about earlier, think carefully about what makes the most sense. Are we going to give the entire family farm to the husband, to the wife, to the new spouse? What about the children? And so then that's where you may want to also consider a trust. So there's many different aspects of estate planning. I think you understand now why I'm saying you got to be very careful if you do it yourself, because there's so many different pieces you want to consider, especially in a unique blended family remarriage situation. Be very careful if you do it yourself. But whatever the case, you need to have at least a basic estate plan. All right, hopefully I didn't make that too complicated. Now is your chance to ask questions. And so if I did, you can clarify, hopefully, anything you're still wondering about. What are your questions?
Yeah,